My name is Gene Lichty. I am the Marketing and Development Director at Cary Christian School in Cary, North Carolina. I am just now finishing 6 years with the school, and I'm always happy to be here and share the thimbles full of wisdom, I suppose, that I've learned in the role over the last couple of years. And I need to begin by apologizing to you. The outlines that you have, and there are a couple of you that don't even have outlines because I only created 60 of them. I thought everybody would be flying home on Saturday morning and no one would actually be in the room. So I only made, they said, do you want 100? And I said, no, 60 will be just plenty. We'll be throwing some away, and here you are. So thank you for being here. But I changed the format of what I was going to be talking about today for a couple of reasons. First of all, they always want to know at the end of January what you're going to be talking about, and you're in the middle of 12 other things. And when Cindy Nightingale calls, I say, well, what's the theme? And she'll say, truth, beauty, and goodness. And I say, okay, truth, beauty, and goodness, and marketing. That's what I'll do. And then I forget about it until 2 months before it's time to speak. And by that time, I'm realizing that I'm getting no calls on how you market the school, and I'm getting a tremendous number of calls in regard to development and how you court a donor and how you come up with donor lists. And one of the things that I like to do here, in the plenary sessions, you get a lot about the philosophy of education, and they paint with a broad brush. But I think that some of us in the workshops have an obligation to give you good meat and potatoes things that you can take home and you can apply directly to your situation. And that's one of the things that I want to do for you, because a lot of you who are in here are in Susan's position. You're just getting started in development. You haven't even spent day one in your office as a marketing and development director for your school, and you don't know exactly how to go about all aspects of the task that's been given you. Another reason why I don't think I'm getting as many marketing calls anymore is because a year ago, Greg Strawbridge, who's the guy who owns Word MP3 and the gentleman who tapes all the conferences and things, he and I put together a DVD. It's three sessions. You open it up, and you've got three sessions with me talking and pop-ups. I'm like a talking head on this, and I talk a lot about marketing, and I talk a lot about the publications you need to put together and how you get them in the right hands and how you increase enrollment at the school. Our school's grown from 400 to 800 in the period of 6 years that I've been there. That's not because of me and all the strategies. That's largely because of God and His good grace and a lot of teachers and administrators doing their job well, which makes my job so much. Sorry, I hit that. Makes my job so much easier. But I've talked last year as well a lot about marketing and what makes a good ad. And so I wanted to do something a little different. But if you don't have this resource, which is on marketing and development, sort of marketing and development for dummies, marketing and development 101, it's a great resource. Not only do you have three sessions with me talking about how you create materials and how you distribute materials, but every piece of collateral that I have, from the signature brochure to case documents for development and raising, you know, $1 million with this piece, to your annual giving brochure, all the copy is in this resource CD. And you can easily download the files. So you don't have to create all the copy, which takes the most time of anything in the process of getting materials together. You can just steal from us. We spent years trying to get it right, trying to explain the trivium, grammar, logic, rhetoric, three sentences each, you know, so you don't overwhelm them with information. How you explain to a group of people what the annual fund is when you've never asked them for money in an annual fund before. We did that years ago, and so we wanted to make that resource available to you. And because we have this, and because few of you have had questions over the phone in the last couple months about marketing at all, I decided to change the format of what I was talking about and talk more about development, how you find donors, how you court a donor. As a matter of fact, we're using this table today, and I'm actually going to simulate a donor lunch a little bit, just talking to a donor, how you develop the relationship, how that hour-long lunch needs to sort of proceed in an effective and in a winsome way. Those types of things are the things that I'm going to occupy your time with this morning. I also wanted to recommend a book. I've never done this before, but there's a book that's written by Thomas Jevons and Rebecca Bassinger called Growing a Giver's Heart. And this is the number one book that I've ever read on getting a good understanding of exactly what I'm doing as a development director. And there are days as a development director when you actually, marketing development, it can be a little discouraging. It can be a little lonely. Me and the Maytag salesman, me and the Maytag repairman, have the loneliest jobs in America. You know, people see me coming down the hall, and they see me. I'm the money guy. I'm the guy who's asking for money. And people, the parents will see me, and they pretend like they don't see me because they either are behind in a commitment or they know that I've called them before and they haven't returned my call about a commitment. And I look at them and I just see them as parents. I don't even know all the faces. Not all the faces are connected to the names yet. I might not even realize that I've called them or why they're avoiding me or behaving strangely. But anyway, this gives you a good perspective on what you're doing, on kingdom building. You know, when I sit down with a donor, I often get involved in their lives, and we'll be talking about things like their wife and her struggle with cancer, and we'll be talking about the importance of giving and understanding that all the resources that you've been given are a gift from God, and you're responsible to invest them wisely. Some of the folks I sit down with who've been in church for 5 years have never tithed, and I feel like I need to explain to them the importance of giving to the church first, and then giving to the school, maybe beyond that or after they've been giving to the church for a while. And so growing a giver's heart helps keep things in perspective for me. You know, people call me the money guy, you know, and you start thinking after a while, well, all they really care about is the bottom line. The board wants to know, how much did I bring in this month? But there's a lot going on in the job that I have beyond just getting their dollars and growing the school. So growing a giver's heart helps with perspective as you're working. How many of you here are actually development directors? How many of you here are marketing and development directors? Okay. And the rest of you, I guess, then are either administrators or board members, or you may be looking for a development director, or you may be, overseeing development activity and you've got a development director. But I hope that this session today sort of hits you where you are, and you're able to, regardless of what your role is with the school, you can take things from this today and make them profitable in your towns and in your schools. Okay. For those of you who have outlines and are looking at outlines, I want to talk a little bit about how you find donors and then what you do with them. All right. So the first thing that we're going to be talking about is how you find donors. And then, secondly, what you do with them. People will ask me, they'll call, and they'll say, where do you get your donor list? You know, did you buy your donor list? Or how did you find the donors that you have? And of course, there are two places. There are two places broadly where you're going to be looking. They're either going to be in the school or they're outside the school, right? They're in the school or they're outside the school. I have here, right now, a file, and this file has 20 families, information on 20 families in it, and 18 of them are in the school, and two of them are within the community. And the question becomes then, the first question becomes, where did you get these names? How did you come about this information? Well, one of the things that I do every spring at the end of the school year is I go around to every classroom. We have 9 classes in K through 2, 9 classes in 3 through 5, 9 in middle school, and 9 in high school. So we have all these classrooms. We have 36 classrooms, and there are teachers in all of them. And I'll go around with the directory from the last year, and I'll sit down with the teacher. This is after the students are gone. We have 3 in school service days for teachers. So they're sitting there cleaning up their classrooms and things, and I'll hand them the directory, and I'll say, based on your knowledge, and it doesn't have to be, it's not a perfect thing, but based on your experience with these families and with this child, is there anybody on this list who you think has been blessed with resources above and beyond and could give in a significant way to the school? And 15 of the 18 names that I have in that file that are people who already are enrolled at the school came from those conversations I had with teachers. And you'll say, well, how would they know? It's an imperfect science. But if the nanny drops the children every morning, it's an indication that they might have some extra money. If they have matching, if his and hers Escalades sitting in, you know, that they use to pick up the children with, that's another thing. If the kids are talking about, if their spring break vacation is a cruise in the Mediterranean, you know, it's just things like that that you're looking for that would indicate, yeah, they have a lot of resource. God's really blessed them in that way. And so that's one thing that I look at. Another thing that I do is I stand outside once or twice a year with Tina and Ginger or some of the other administrators during carpool. And I'll be taking notes myself on who's driving what, how many Jags go through the, and it's really imperfect, but you've got to start somewhere. All right. So through my own investigation at carpool and through talking to all of our teachers, now you have to remember that we have 433 families. And so I don't even know all the families. I can't begin to know all their names and things. And so this is the imperfect science that I use in creating a donor list. Then I take all those names that I've been given from teachers and things, and I'll go to Ginger, who's sitting in the back. She's the K-2 principal. Or I'll go to Tina. She's the 3-5 principal. And go to Larry, and I'll show him my list of names, the 18 names that I have. And it started with 21 names. And Larry scratched off 3 of them. And he said, yeah, they have the resources, but they don't have the heart. You know, two of them are unhappy with the school, you know, to the extent that we're not even sure we want them with us. You know, they might not be invited back next year, and they don't even know that yet. The families might not be coming back. And one of the families on my list, they had tremendous resources, but he's just been sued for $2.2 million, and he's about ready to put his house on the market, but I didn't know that. But Larry did, because they came in and they talked about the fact that they're not sure if they're going to be able to pay tuition next year, and they always paid it in advance. Well, those are things that I don't know, but those are things that I don't want to find out about after I've invited them to a lunch. You know, I want to be clear that the 18 families that are part of the school, that are part of this donor hit list that I have, that all 18 families are, hit list is, sorry. They're on my radar screen. The 18 families that are on my radar screen for between now and October. By the way, I do this twice a year, all right? So in the spring of the year, in May, I get a list together, and again at the end of October, and I'll be finished with these families by October. It takes about that long to get 20 families scheduled, to make the initial call, to schedule the lunch, to have them prayerfully consider the things I've asked them to prayerfully consider, and then to get the signed a card back. I mean, to get through all those families will take me about 6 months, and then I start over with another 20 families again. And so that's sort of the way it works. So one resource is families within the school, and figuring out who can give is an imperfect thing. But there are stop gaps that you can put in place to make sure that everybody who's in your file is a qualified candidate, and you just need to do a little bit of research. Okay. Then what I do, after I get my 18 families, I go to Lisa Heister, who's at our front desk, who's in charge of the database, and I'll say, Lisa, print out the profile, print out the information in the database on each one of those families. So let's just open my file up here. Okay, first family, I've got it, they're alphabetical. So it's Jim and Kim Condalmo. Okay, so they're on here. And I have information on his work, where he works, what his work phone number is, who his children are, what grades they're in, who their teachers are. I've got a resource here that I can use in doing homework before I meet with them. So I can talk intelligently to him, not knowing him very well, about where he works. I'll find out information about the company. And I'll talk about homework a little bit later. But I'll print out a profile on each one of those families, and that's how I prepare. So that's how you get families within the school, especially if it's a bigger school. It's harder to figure out who they are and where they are. In regard to the community, 25% of the money that comes into the school from resources, from men who own businesses within the community. They're not part of the school. They'll never be a part of the school. And the question is, well, how do you get those guys? How do you reach those folks? Well, one of the things you need to do as a marketing and development director is you need to be reading the newspaper and all the local magazines. You need to be aware of who just sold a business and just got a windfall of, you know, who's got money, who's got cash, and And it's always helpful if they're Christians. If they're not Christians, it's much harder to get the dollars and get their attention, because there are a lot of other people that are involved with nonprofits and 501c3s that also read the same article. It's no benefit to have your name in the paper with a big article about you just having sold a business and profited, you know, millions of dollars. But that's one resource. The other thing is, and I talk about this every year, it's so important that the development director is out there in the community. I had the school join the Chamber of Commerce. I had a Cary Christian School join the Chamber of Commerce, and we place a big ad in the Chamber of Commerce directory that comes out every year. And we're on their website. It's for $400. Our school is in every welcome basket of every family that comes into Cary, because they get a Chamber directory, and we've got a half page ad in there. For $450, it's the ad that keeps on giving, you know? And if you put an ad in the Chamber directory, they automatically include you on their website. So under private schools, we're the first one to show up because we're Cary Christian School, but we're right there at the top because we're Chamber members. And people use that as a resource all the time when they're moving into a community. And it links you right to, you know, it's got your website right there. It names the school and the address. It's got the phone number, all the contact information. A tremendous resource. So you join the Chamber of Commerce, and once a month there's a mixer. And I go to the mixer, and I represent the school, and I meet some of the movers and shakers in the community. Same thing with Rotary. I have no time, really, to be a member of Rotary. If I was not employed at Cary Christian School, Rotary does fine things in the community. It's great, but I'm a full-time pastor, and I'm a full-time marketing and development director, and I've got four little kids, and I've got a wife, and I don't need to be going to a Friday morning breakfast every week and sitting down with a bunch of guys and talking about a lot of good things we could do in the community that the church needs to really be doing, but that's another subject. So anyway, I joined the Rotary, and the relationships that I built there have been great. We have men sending their children to our school because of my involvement at Rotary. There have been dollars that have come into the school. We have a lot of the guys who sponsor the golf tournament and host at the golf tournament, their relationships from Rotary and the Chamber of Commerce, things like that. So you need to be involved in the community, but keeping your face in the newspaper, keeping your nose in there, knowing who's doing what, who's buying and selling, getting yourself out there in the community through Rotary and through Chamber will help bring resources in so that eventually 10, 20, 30% of the money that's coming into the school is coming in from non-enrolled parents. That well is only so deep, and they're paying tuition. And truthfully, only if you're in an affluent community, maybe 15 to 20% of the families, maybe in an affluent community, can really contribute in a significant way to a capital campaign. But most of our families can't do that. I have 84 families right now that have signed pledge cards that are committed to giving $5,000 to $25,000 a year over a period of time to the school. So there's several hundred thousand dollars that's always out there that's committed to coming in over a period of time. But that's 84 families in and outside the school, and we have 433 families. And we are in an affluent community. We are atypical for North Carolina. We're one of the most affluent communities that you could find. And we're even in something of a bubble economically. We haven't been affected as much. We're still growing like crazy, and they're still building and things. And so it's different. It's different for us than it is maybe for you. You need to remember this. You take the things that I'm saying today. I'm talking very broadly and generally about what I do and how I go about it. But you have to take the things that I'm saying, and you need to be able to sort of apply them at home. And your situation isn't mine. It never is, and not down to the last detail. So anyway, you have this donor list. You have this donor file that you've created from different resources. One of the other things that I needed to mention, one very significant way of getting outside dollars, folks outside the school, to invest in the school, is by creating a steering committee. And I'm being repetitive here again because I've talked about this. I talked about this 2 years ago, and I talk about it also in the in this DVD. But when I arrived in Cary, North Carolina, and started my job, I had no experience with the community at all. I'd been there 2 days prior just to check it out and meet some of the folks that were committed to starting a church with me if I came. But I didn't know anybody. How is a development director supposed to get, and the goal initially was, we'd like to see 40% of the money, which is a very difficult percentage to reach. We'd love to see 40% of the money coming into the school be from within the community. Well, how's the guy who's new in town, who nobody knows, supposed to even begin to whittle away at achieving that goal? You can't yourself. And so I went to Larry Stevenson, who is my boss, who's the superintendent of school, and I said, I'd like to create a steering committee. We have a board at the school with, you know, seven board members. And I said, I'd like to create a steering committee with seven men from the community who love God, who love the school and are already committed to the school, and who are men of integrity, who have good reputations about town and have been here forever. You know, they know everybody. They own their own businesses, that type of thing. And it's not a steering committee that's going to help run the school. The only thing that they're helping with is development. So they're under me, and I'm under you, and we're all under the board. So this, we're not setting up a something that's going to rival the board in any way. It's not supposed to threaten the board. It's supposed to assist me in getting things done. They're the ones who help, fill seats at a major donor dinner. You know, I get those seven men, and I talk to them about the school and the importance of their new role. And I know that they're busy men because they all own their own companies, so I don't want to take too much of their time. But I'll tell you, 5 months from now, I'm having a donor dinner under a tent, and I've got 12 tables to fill. I want 100 folks there. I want 50 families represented. And you each have a table, and you each have to bring four couples from the community that I don't know, and your only job is to get them there. And from that point on, it's my job to meet with them, to woo them, to develop relationships with them, but you need to make the introduction. That was wonderful. And sometimes I'll throw them a bone, and I'll say, okay, you can bring one family within the school that I don't know well, especially at the beginning. I didn't know anybody, so I didn't care as much. Now, after being there for 6 years, I'm looking for new faces all the time. But initially, I said, you can bring one family from within the school, but I want you to bring two couples. And there are 10 at your table, so bring two couples that don't have anything to do with the school at all, but are partners in your practice, or that are other development land development guys in town, that type of thing. So another resource, a huge resource for me, is the steering committee. All right, so that's how I create this file that has 18 families within the school and two families outside the school that I'm working on this year. So. All right, so you've got this file, and it's sitting on the corner of your desk, and now the question is, what do I do with it, or how do I go about using this to the glory of God and great blessing in the school? Well, the first thing that you need to do is if it's a family within the school, is pick up the phone and make a call, and don't be nebulous in regard to why it is that you're calling. Don't be mysterious about it. Some of the folks have never met you before; they're not going to recognize your name if it's a larger school. And you say, hey, my name is Gene Lichty. I'm the director of development at Cary Christian School. And largely, most of the time, they'll say, oh, yes, because they know you, because you've been standing in front of the crowd at Christmas talking about the annual fund and the importance of giving. They know you. You don't necessarily know them. So they'll probably recognize the name. But you say, hey, how's summer going? Are you enjoying it? Enjoying the break from the carpooling and the pace and things? And they'll say yes, or they may talk a little bit about their situation this summer. And then you say, listen, I'd like to get together with you and your wife sometime over the summer when we've all got a little bit more time. And you're just on the phone, and you say, and you need to tell them why you want to meet. You say, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the school. You may know that we're trying to purchase another 20 acres, and over the next year, we're looking for some families who'd be able to come on board and really help us realize that vision and realize that dream. And I'd like to talk to you about it, and like to walk you on the property a little bit and answer any questions you have about the school. You know, you can be a blessing to them as well. How can I help you? Or would you like to talk to Larry about some things and Larry Stevenson, because he can wax on about the curriculum and the methodology in a way that I can't. I'm not an expert on classical Christian education. As a matter of fact, when I arrived in Cary, North Carolina, I knew virtually nothing about classical Christian education. It's not a requirement for a development marketing director that he can write his thesis on it, all right? Because you have all these other resources. I'm continually introducing folks to Larry, or I was talking to Matt Vest. Matt Vest is working, he's actually in here somewhere because I saw his face. There he is. He's working with George Grant at New College Franklin. to raise money. And I said, you have a tremendous resource because George Grant can paint a picture with words like almost nobody else can. I said, I would be introducing people, potential donors, to him. Don't you try and paint the picture when you've got a great resource like him around. Use him. But anyway, I'll ask him for a meeting. And of the people, of the 20 names and the households that are in this file, about 16 of those, I can plan about 16 of those people actually meeting with me. I'll say, I want to take you to lunch. I want to walk you around on the property that we're intending to buy, and I want to take you to lunch and talk to you about what you can do. You always want to be really honest with why you have the meeting, because you don't want to waste your time and you don't want to waste their time and you don't want to blindside them at the table. If you just say, I want to talk to you about the school and you know, I can answer any questions you have because you so badly want the meeting, a lot of times it ends up being a waste of time for you, because there will be four people in there who are going to tell me, I can't help you. I can't help you right now. Maybe I can help you later, or I can't help you now, and I don't even think we're staying at the school. Maybe you're going to get that response, but you want to know that up front. You want to know that up front as well. And so the first thing that you do is you need to make the call. And some of you are going to be in this position. You're in it for the first time, like I was 6 years ago, and all of this makes you really nervous. You like designing the brochures and the marketing of the school and increasing enrollment through applications and all that. But when it comes to asking for the lunch and things, you get a little bit nervous about that. You know what you need to do? You need to march yourself down to the fourth grade classroom where they don't have desks and they're working off their laps and look at the kids and then go back to your office and make the call, because that will give you the courage to go do it. You're not doing it for you. You're not doing it for you. You're doing it for them. So you just need to walk down the hallways and see all the resources that are so obviously lacking and then go back and say, okay, I can do it for you. I can do it for the kids. I can do it for the school. I did have to do that initially because I never asked anybody for a dollar in my life. As a matter of fact, I prided myself outside of my parents. But outside of my parents, I never asked anybody for a dollar in my life, and it was a hard thing for me to do. But you have to always remember, you're not asking for you. And if you don't love the school, you're not going to be good at this. And if you don't believe in classical Christian education, if you don't understand your job as kingdom building, you're not going to be good at this, because you're going to get rejection. If you're bad with receiving rejection, this will be a tough road to hoe, okay? Now, most of the time, again, if you're doing a good job with researching things and qualifying people, you know, one of the questions I ask a teacher, it's not just which are the families that have a nanny that dropped them off at school, or where are the matching escalates? My second question is, are they happy at the school? Are they pleased with the level of education that their kids are getting? Because if they're not pleased with those things, it doesn't matter how much money they have, you're not getting any of it. You know, the Red Cross might, and the Visual Arts Ball, they'll drop $10,000 there, but they're not going to give it to you unless they're pleased. And so those are important things for you to be able to qualify with before you ever sit down with them. And at this time, there you are. I'm going to have Tim McClellan come up here for a second. Tim is Tim, jump right up here. You sit in this spot. Tim is the quintessential donor, all right? He fits the demographic perfectly. He's middle-aged, he's balding, he's the perfect donor. As a matter of fact, he's a donor at Cary. He's not only a founder at Cary Christian School, but he and his wife have given to the school. As a matter of fact, I've sat down before with Tim McClellan and gone through the same process that I'm about to go through right now. And Tim's a good friend as well, where he was until I said that about the balding in the middle age. So, but here's what, you know, this is after we've made the call, Tim and Ann. A lot of times, let me say this before I get started here, I always invite the wife. I'm always talking to the man about the appointment, but I always invite the wife, because these are decisions that they make together. You know, the husband's always considering his wife if he's doing what he needs to be doing. And although he may be raising the money, if it's that kind of a household, where he's generating the income, they need to make decisions like where they're giving together. And so she's always invited. And 50% of the time, I'm addressing a husband and a wife. And sometimes it's just I and the other guy. But so I've made the call. He's agreed to the lunch. We're sitting at a restaurant. It's a restaurant that doesn't have a lot of loud music playing in the background. It's a restaurant where you can get some privacy. It's a little bit quiet. Sometimes it's not a restaurant. Sometimes, depending on what we're doing, I'll just go and order out sandwiches and we'll bring them to the school. If it's someone, Tim's a parent at the school. Tim has children at the school. I don't need to give him a tour of school. He's there at carpool. He's doing pickup. His wife's doing drop-off every day. If it's someone from outside the school, the greatest thing that I can do is actually bring them in. Bring them in and show them what's going on. Bring them in, not the first week of school, because there's a lot to get worked out, especially kindergarten. They're learning norms, and you never take them down that hallway. I don't take them down a K-2 hallway the first week of school, not even the first month of school. Tours are great toward the end of the year when everything's full-orbed and the children are all cued. Whether it's with chemistry and the periodic table of elements, and they can name them off. But it's great to bring them in there and sort of woo them, or the parts of speech, and they can go in there and they can dissect a sentence really quickly, and they're using their sound offs and all of that. So the first month of school, I don't normally take people through, but it's more effective for me to have them come into the school and then go in a conference room and to have ordered out subs from Subway or something like that. That's more productive and more profitable than taking them to a restaurant and keeping them from the thing that they really need to see. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't have probably called you up here this early, but just it's a comfortable seat. But this brings me to another point. I am only going to be as successful, and I was telling Susan this earlier, I'm only going to be as successful as a development director, in my role as a marketing development director, as the board and the administration allow me to be. If the board and the administration are doing their job, if the board can close its eyes and paint a picture for me of what the school looks like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if they can give me lots of detail in regard to what the building looks like and architectural renderings, the more information that I have, the more likely it is that the wallet will be loosened that I'm sitting across from at a donor lunch, because these people are often Christians. They feel responsible for the resources that God's blessed them with, and they want to know exactly how their money is being used. So if I'm sitting across the table from someone who can drop $50,000 over 3 years, but I can't tell them exactly, well, we do have a piece of property, but I have no idea what the building looks like really, or how many students are it's going to be able to house, or what style of architecture we're going to be using, or whether it has a chemistry lab, or whether it has a computer lab. If I can't answer any of those questions, he's likely going to say, you know, I really love the school, but until you guys get some of this figured out, I'm just going to hold on to the money. Why don't you come back a year or two from now with your plans? All right? And another thing is, I'm not going to be successful if the school doesn't smell right. People will come up all the time and they'll say, are we ready for a development director? And I'll say, I don't know. I'll ask questions like, how old are you? How old is the school? How long have you been in existence? How does the school smell? Do you have a good product? Your product is the school. It's the families. It's the children. It's the teachers. If I walked in the school, would I be impressed? Or do you have a lot of things that you need to get worked out? And if they can't answer affirmatively, we're very pleased by God's grace that we're at this spot. And anybody who walks into the school is impressed with the behavior of the children and the curriculum. How do your students test? Those are good. Those are things that you need to be asking yourself. And they'll help. You can answer the question yourself. Are you ready for a development director? Do you have a good product? If you don't, it doesn't matter who you hire. It doesn't matter how many years of experience they've been. If the product is bad, you can't sell it. You won't be able to sell it. Okay? Anyway, let's assume we have a good product. All right? And I've made the call, and Tim is here. Now, when I start a conversation, I'll break away from this a little bit, but when I start a conversation, because I'm developing a relationship with Tim, I'm not just asking him for money now, but I'm really trying to get to know him and his wife and his family and his concerns, and I intend to know Tim for 20 years. In other words, if he has the ability to give me $10,000 or $15,000 or $25,000 or $50,000 this year, he'll have the ability again probably in 3 years and in 6 years and in 9 years. And so as long as I'm the development director, I'm going to have a relationship with this guy if the lunch goes well, okay? And maybe have a relationship with him for 20 years if the lunch doesn't go well. But when I sit down with Tim, we don't start talking about the school right away. As a matter of fact, my any flyer that I have on the school, the signature brochure, or this is a case document that talks about giving and we're trying to raise $2 million with this thing. This isn't even on the table. This is under my rear. This is on the bench beside me, but it's not on the table, because we're going to talk for about 35 minutes about things like this. How's Ann doing?
She's doing well, better.
Her health is, you know.
A few ups and downs, but things are going better.
So. Okay, good.
It's all part of getting older, you know.
That's right. And the family's enjoying the summer?
Yeah, we're having a good summer. My daughter's working at the school.
Right, I see her around there. We just love having her at the school.
That's been a blessing. And my son is taking various lessons, and I have Meech taking a class, and some little tutoring here and there. So it's been a busy summer.
Yeah, I would hear that. We're pretty busy, too. Kids are on the swim team. And I see Zach because he's got football practice already.
Yeah, in fact, today he's at a clinic.
Is he really?
Yeah, they're having a clinic on campus, a football clinic, and he's there.
Okay. And our conversation goes on like this for about 35 minutes. If you honestly, I'm trying to get to know him. This brings you back to the importance of doing your homework ahead of time and knowing the names of his kids and knowing who the teachers are in the classroom. And if there's been a problem with that child, let's say there's been a discipline problem in Mrs. Baba's class, in Anita Baba's class this year, I need to know that he might want to go there. I don't want to be surprised. I don't want to be sitting there talking to him about giving to the school and say, I've got some real concerns about Anita Bobbin. And I'm thinking, why didn't anybody tell me about this? Because I talked to the teacher. You don't want to get surprised like that at a donor meeting. You want to be prepared for anywhere they want to go. I might know about I'll even want to know about his practice. I know how many doctors are in his practice. I know what his specialty is. I know that he works nights. I know why he's tired at 11 o'clock in the morning, because normally he would have gone to bed at 10, you know? And so I find out as much as I can about this guy so that we can have that 35-minute conversation. If I don't know anything going into the meeting, the conversation is a little stilted, and I keep asking questions, but it looks like I'm just asking questions to fill time, you know? If he plays golf, I want to know about his golf game, and he's going to ask me if I play, and I'm going to say, well, I did, but I've had two back surgeries, and I miss playing, but the kids play, and their grandmother's, she rates courses for the LPGA. And I'm getting to know him, and we're actually developing a relationship. And you know what I do as soon as I leave the meeting? I take out his paperwork and I write down all the things that I would forget. Like, it's his birthday tomorrow. He just told me that. He's, you know, turning 40. And he's not really middle-aged. I try to get back in his good graces because he is a donor. So anyway. But he's turning 40. But I want to know that. I actually have sent birthday cards, or I'll remember, especially significant birthdays. I sent out 250, two guys that are on the donor list turned 50 this last academic year, and I actually sent them a little gift and a little note that said, "Way to go." But anyway, that's what I'm doing. And eventually, because we're talking about our families, it gets around to. The conversation gets around to maybe me having been here for 6 years and the family adjusting well and how much we enjoy the community, the church community that I'm a part of, because we're part of the same church community, so we have that in common too. Tim attends the church that I pastor. But we'll be talking about those things, and I'll talk about my job at the school. And as soon as I start talking about my job at the school, I start putting my hand, you know, this isn't, but you start getting prepared to bring things out and talk about where we are as a school. And where we're going as a school, and the importance of people giving above and beyond tuition, and the fact that few can do it. You know, I mentioned the fact that while everybody can give to the annual fund because it's $20 or $80 or $100, and if you don't know anything about distinguishing between an annual fund, which everybody should have, I don't care if you're in your second or your third year. In your first year, maybe not. You're still getting things worked out. But by the time you roll around to your second year, you have to have an annual fund. But those things are discussed again in the in those DVDs. So I don't want to talk about the differences between an annual fund and a capital campaign. But I will tell the donor, like Tim, who's savvy in it because he's been hearing me preach it for about 6 years to the 430 families of the school, I'll say anybody can give to the annual fund. But there are few who can really help us along in maintaining and advancing the mission and the vision of the school as laid out by the board. And you know right now that we're trying to buy an extra 16 acres to increase the size of the campus. You know the demand for classical Christian education in our area is something that we can't even begin to keep up with. But we're tired of turning away families that we'd love to have at the school because we don't have space. And the only way we can accommodate that is to grow it. And we can't grow it unless we have money outside of tuition. And what I'd like you and your wife to do, and then I'll show them, because I've done my job, And because I have architectural renderings, this was phase two. We finished phase two at our school now. But these were renderings that talked about the square footage, exactly how the space was going to be used, how it was going to be laid out. We talk in here, and again, I have all this information in those, you know, how you lay out a case document, which is the case for giving. A case document is the case for giving to the school. But you talk about growth and all these things that I've already covered. But I'll slide this over to him, and I'll say, I want you and Anne to take a look at this, and I want you to prayerfully consider what you might do to advance the vision and the mission of the school as laid out in here, and I'm going to call you. I never tell him to call me because I may not hear from him. I've got to keep driving this thing. I need to make sure that I'm still in the seat. But I'll say, I want you to prayerfully consider, and in 3 weeks I'm going to call you, and I'm going to meet with you again, and we're going to talk about this. But I don't want you to give under compulsion. I want you to give joyfully. It's something that you need to pray about because it's a big decision, because I'm not asking you for $500. I don't meet with anybody unless I think they can give at least 5 to 10, and a lot of them are capable of giving up to 100. So usually the person I'm sitting across from can give between 5 and 100,000. And I never suggest an amount. This is different than some. There are other development directors who employ different techniques. You know, some will say, try and figure out how much Tim can give. I think he can give 25, and then double the ask. So I'd like you to prayerfully consider giving $50,000 to this school. Right. Now, I think that's a poor technique. Let me explain why I think that's a poor technique. Somebody at the table loses, all right? Either I lose because when I asked for 50, he was considering 100. And he said, well, if you're satisfied with 50, that's wonderful because I can give to this, this, and this as well. Or he was considering 20. And that's all that they can give, and that's a lot of money. And I've belittled the gift because I asked for 50. And now anything less than that is a disappointment. He thinks he's disappointing the school. He's disappointing the development director. He's disappointing the staff, the board, and all that. So I trust God that the guy that I'm sitting across from will really prayerfully consider it. And our school's been tremendously blessed. We don't need unhappy givers. We don't need the money that bad. If you can't give joyfully, if you can't give biblically, if I can't figure out a way to get people to give to the school or consider the school, where I'm not twisting their arm and getting them to give under compulsion, then there's a serious problem, and we need to go back to the drawing board in regard to the techniques that we employ to grow the school, and the philosophy behind it all. All right, and so I don't throw a number out, but I just ask them to prayerfully consider. All right. Now, I don't even know where I am on my outline, and I can't even find my. Oh, there's my outline. It's clear over here. All right. So I've made the ask, and the thing that I do, you can just stay up here, Tim. The thing that I do, like I said, immediately after Tim leaves, is to go home and make notes in my file about where his family's at, any concerns that he has. If he has a question that I can't answer about athletics, I met with a guy on Tuesday of this week, the day before I flew down here, and he had questions about his son's going into sixth grade and he can start playing sports, and he wondered if there was a summer basketball camp, and he wondered who the middle school basketball coach was. I had no idea on any of that. But I told him, I'll find out for you, and I'll call you back. Or they have a question about curriculum going into third grade. They're going from second to third grade. They haven't had a child in there. Well, I'm not going to begin to pretend to know the answers to any of his questions about curriculum because I'm just the money guy, right? And so I'll say, look, we can schedule a meeting. You know what? You need to talk to Tina Armstrong. She's the principal of the 3-5, and she's best equipped to answer that question. And so I'm gonna have her call you, all right? But you need to remember to follow through on anything at that meeting that you said you were going to do. Otherwise, you're going to look inept, all right? So the first thing you do is you make notes in your file about the things you promised or some information that they conveyed, all that. The next thing you do, the next day, you send a thank you note. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule with your important business and things to meet with us. And thank you for prayerfully considering, remind them what they're supposed to be doing so they actually have a hard copy. You're supposed to be prayerfully considering what you might do to advance the mission and the vision of the school at Cary Christian School. So remind them of those things. And then 3 weeks later, you know, I put it on my calendar, call. You're probably wondering, good grief, what is a guy who's been in the business? You know, I have this, look at my 21st century technology. Look what I'm using to track doters and things. We have been given, Tim, actually, and the board gave me software a long time ago, and I did use it for a while, but it wasn't synced with the school software. All right, so I had Act 1, and then they sent me Act 2, and Act was fine, but it just wasn't compatible with the database at our school. If you were in this room on Thursday morning, there was a panel discussion, and Larry Stevenson, my boss, was in here, and he talked about Sycamore, which is a software that we're testing this year. But it does sync the database to my files, so I can access them. Right now, I have to go to other employees of the school and ask them to print out database information for me. And so it was a very ineffective software because of the fact that things weren't linked the way they should have been. And so I am going to attempt for the first time to use software in tracking donors and in conversations and in reminding me about the call I need to make 3 weeks later. And you really need to take good notes, and you really need to, if you're not administratively detailed, then get somebody to assist you, even on a volunteer basis, because you've got donors that you're supposed to be calling for the meeting, you've got your meetings, and you've got follow-up to meetings, and you've got notes, and you've got 20 of them. I can't even, I've got a small mind, but I can only manage 20 people at a time. And so that's why I do 20 in May, and I kick that off, and then I do 20 at the end of October, beginning of November, and I'm always working with those families, all right? And remember, what you're doing at the school is you're establishing relationships. As a donor, you're as a development director, you're establishing relationships with donors inside the school community, outside the school community. That's what you're doing. And when, this is the last thing on your outline, when Tim and Ann do make a gift to the school, you need to acknowledge the gift. You need to acknowledge the gift within 24 hours of the time it arrives on your door in the mail, that check arrives. You need to thank them. And depending on the size of the gift, you might thank them in different ways. If someone, any gift that comes into the school, I don't care if it's $20, it gets acknowledged, all right? And the easiest thing for me to do with a $20 gift is to pick up the phone and just call them and hope, and you know, and some days when you're busy, you hope you can leave a message on the answering machine. And so you say, on behalf of all the students and the staff and the families of Cary Christian School, we want to thank you for your gift to the annual fund. Obviously, if it's a $20 gift, it's not to the capital campaign. They're making a gift to the annual fund, and that $20 gift is fine because about 350 of those little gifts that are between $20, $200, and $1,000 add up to, you know, $100,000 by the end of the season. But every single gift that comes into the school, I can't tell you the number of times that people have said, I'm giving another $1,000, and you know why? You're the only person who's ever really thanked me for a gift under $1,000. You know, sometimes we get a form letter. They get a form letter shot out. If it's a gift over $100, I actually write a little note. If it's a gift over $1,000, you actually get a little basket on your doorstep. We have Great Harvest Bread Company. I don't know if you have that or not in your area, but they have this little $10 gift where you can get a bag of pancake mix, a spatula, and it's all wrapped together, and a little thing of syrup. And it costs me, I buy them in bulk. I buy them 12 at a time for $12 each. So if you give me $1,000, I'm going to give you $12 back. And it's a nice little gesture. It arrives on your doorstep with a thank you note. If you give over $5,000, you have a set of Adirondack chairs that are delivered to your front door with a big red bow, and it has CCS's logo burned into it with a thank you note attached. And so I tier the gifts, and they'll say, wow, this is so... They didn't give because they thought they were going to get Adirondack chairs, but we live in North Carolina where you can get a set of Adirondack chairs for about $150. You give me $5,000 or $10,000, I don't deliver cars, you know, with $200,000 gifts, we're not delivering Volkswagen Jettas. We stop at Adirondack chairs. But so whether it's $5,000 or whether it's $25,000, that's what you get. But they're not giving for the gift, but you would not believe the response that you get for that little kindness. And it's just a fraction of what they gave. So think about what donors might like. In the winter, instead of a Great Harvest Bread Company package, it's a basket of winter cheer, two mugs with CCS logo, a bag of Caribou coffee, and in a little basket that's all wrapped up with a bow and my thank you note. All right? So be sure to thank them right away. I always have these things in stock. We have chairs in stock that get delivered for us. We have all these baskets in stock and everything, so we can just shoot it right out there. You need to thank them immediately. Another way we thank donors is at the end of the year. I don't have one with me. Again, if you got the resource, if you got the CDs, It has the legacy. It's a legacy piece that goes out at the end of the fiscal year, and we don't attach any dollars. No one knows how much Tim gave, whether it was $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, but they know that Tim and Ann McClellan gave to the Capital Campaign. And there are 86 families that are listed under Capital Campaign. There are 300 families listed under the Annual Fund. The grandparents who joined the Grandparents Association, there are 120 of those listed. All the kids that walked in the walkathon, they're listed. All of 45 of our local corporate friends are listed. It's an honor roll of giving. It's just a listing of people. We don't divide it. These are the 5,000 and up. They're part of the Eagles Club. These are the 10,000 and up. They're part of the President's Cabinet. We don't do that because they don't want, they're Christians. They don't want, they're looking for rewards elsewhere. You know, a lot of them have issues with that. Some people don't want their name in there at all, but they need to tell me that up front. They don't want the board to know that they gave $10,000. They don't want anybody to know but me and a bookkeeper at the school. And I'll honor that because if I don't honor it, they may ask for the gift back. And it was their request. It's a simple request, something I should be able to honor. Can someone tell me what time it is?
9:25.
Okay. Does anybody, you may have questions, you may not. You do have questions. No, I don't. That brings up an important, but I have in the past. If I am, like Matt and I talked about this just yesterday. We met, and he's just getting started. And he said, what's the most, okay, so I'm using George, but George Grant's a busy man. He's wonderful at waxing on about the vision and the mission and things like that, but does George really want to be interrupted 30 times in the next 6 months because he needs to tell the same story to yet another potential donor who might not give anything to the school? And I said, well, what you need to do is you need to create an event. When we kicked off the campaign to do phase one of the school, I had my steering committee there, you know, and they each were responsible to fill a table. So I have this big tent, it's about this size, and we really went all out. Because the guys that were in that room that we were asking for dollars are used to going to the Visual Arts Ball, the Red Cross Ball, they go to the Miracle League dinner. And so it was a big white tent. It had everything but a chandelier in it. You had all the tables that had white linen on them. You had some of the members of the Raleigh Philharmonic in a corner that were playing strings. There were six string players in there. And I spent $6,000 feeding these people. And we did it right on the property so they could see it. And instead of having Larry meet with all these people individually, which gets back to your question, I had Larry stand up and talk about the mission and the vision of the school to all these people at the same time. He just had to do it one time. And then I had students get up, and they gave, like, one of our sophomores, Grant Linderman, he gave the St. Crispin's Day going to war speech. And he just memorized it, and he could really give it. And some of our children who played violins joined the symphony over here, and we're just playing. You just notice these little subtle things going on. But the students, again, get the product in front of them. The children are impressive. And some of our students stood up, and they were able to go through the periodic table of elements real fast just by looking at with the teacher there. We were able to do that. So it was very short. You have an hour and a half with these people. They're busy. They don't want to sit there all night. You don't want to bore them. You want to impress them. And so Larry got up. Students were getting up. I closed. I'm the guy who makes the ask. I said, you're here for a reason. Again, all of you, you're on my radar screen now. I will find you and I will bug you. I want you to consider advancing this school and really helping us make a home in this community for these 400 students and these 240 families that are part of Cary Christian School. And you can do it. And we raised, and initially, you know, Larry's sitting there. Larry's sitting in the back of the room right now. And you think, 6,000, what kind of food are we having in? How much does it cost to get a tent? And you'll have questions like that. You will. I have a generous boss because he trusts me. But initially, Susan, when you get started and you go to ask for money for a donor dinner, they're going to say, good grief. But you need to remind them, we're trying to get $300,000 out of the tent, and you're not going to let me prime the pump with $6,000? I'm so hamstrung, I don't know if I can do that. You know, you're wondering, can I do my job? Are you going to let me do my job? Because you hired me to perform this function. 2 minutes left. Okay.
When does Cary use its annual fund?
There are, you'll see if you come up here afterwards that there's a card. We allow for restricted giving. initially, when we started an annual fund, you just gave to the school. You didn't get to direct your dollars. And the superintendent and the board determined where the money needed to be spent. And annual fund gifts go to enhance existing programs and services. In other words, you might buy more computers. You might be buying more books for the library. You might be buying microscopes. But, you know, you've already got a science program, so you're advancing it. You've already got a computer lab, but you need to update some of the screens. And so that's what the annual fund is for, to enhance the educational experience of the kids, or even sports. But what we did, and you know, this really hasn't had the impact that I thought it would, but it did motivate another 10% of the population in giving to the annual fund. We allow you to direct your dollars now. And so we create the categories that they can give in, because we know where the needs are, and we're going to be spending in those areas anyway. So it's not a big deal. But we have a science and technology. Well, first of all, we say you can just give to the general fund, area of greatest need, which means Larry gets to decide. And 80% of the dollars that come in go that way because they're happy. They're pleased at the school. I think an indicator that they're not pleased with the way things are going would be if 50% of the money was directed, because they don't think you're capable of discerning that the sports program is just failing on the field. And so, you know, all this money comes in for athletics. But really, 80% of the dollars that come in, they say, Larry, you determine where it needs to go, because I really don't know. We're happy. But we have science and technology. You can give to science and technology. You can give to athletics. You can give to Friends of the Library. That would be for books and things there. You can give to scholarships and financial aid, or you can give to the arts. So that's it. Thank you very much.